the sisters of mercy, they are not departed or gone. They were waiting for me when I thought that I just can't go on. And they brought me their comfort, and later they brought me this song. Oh, I hope you run into them, you've been traveling so long. Yes, you must leave everything that you cannot control. It begins with your family, but soon it comes round to your soul. Well, I've been where you're hanging, I think I can see how you're pinned. When you're not feeling holy, your loneliness says that you've sinned. Well, they lay down beside me, I made my confession to them. They touched both my eyes, and I touched the dew on their hem. If your life is a leaf that the seasons tear off and condemn, they will bind you with love that is graceful and green as a stem. When I left, they were sleeping. I hope you run into them soon. Don't turn on the lights, you can read their address by the moon. And you won't make me jealous if I hear they sweetened your night. We weren't lovers like that, and besides, it would still be all right. Hello, everyone. I'm Chuck Gregory. This is the New American Dream Radio Show, and we are streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. And I just thought I would open up with that song, Sisters of Mercy, by Leonard Cohen. And now I'm going to jump right into our first guest of the evening, Sheena Powell-Zuri. Welcome to the show, Sheena, and Happy New Year. Well, I thought we had her on. Hello, Sheena?
Yes, Chuck, I'm here. Happy New Year.
Okay.
A little technical difficulties.
That mute button will get you.
thank you. Thank you so much, Chuck, for having me on with the New American Dream. I'm really excited to be here.
Well, good. Thank you for being
fresh
here.
Off, thank you for having me. Well, fresh off the Christmas holidays, I find it apropos to mention this charming quote on your website, thenewdream.us, where Crash Davis from the movie Bull Durham says, "I believe in opening your presents Christmas morning rather than Christmas Eve, that Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone, etc." And you go on to say, Chuck, that at New Dream you believe there is so much more, that Americans live on lies, subsist on lies, but it's not really living.
Exactly.
Now, more than ever, I remembered in my lifetime, we are fed a steady diet of lies, not by the man or some intangible construct, but by our own president, the president of the United States, the most powerful person in the world, the most powerful influence on our planet, by virtue of this office in our great democracy. And we are fed little by little these lies. And before we know it, we realize we've become fat with political and social malnourishment. Is that really living? All supporters of Donald Trump, with their eyes glazed over, are accepting the lies perpetuated daily. It is in their power, our power as U.S. citizens, all of us, to call Donald Trump out. Why isn't anyone saying anything? Why isn't anyone doing anything about it? I'm incredulous every time I hear false statements almost on a daily basis, not almost, truly on a daily basis, coming out of the mouth and statements on Twitter from our own president. Mm-hmm. There was a fascinating article in the Washington Post last month online that claimed that in the time Trump's been in office, over 1,000 days, something like 1,055 days, he's made 15,413 false or misleading claims. Mm-hmm. And it's very easy to check these facts. It's very easy to take what Trump says and check and see if it's really true. If we as citizens use our judgment and logic to try and discern true from false, we can stand up and take action. Call Trump out on these blatant lies. But I'm no expert on anything political. My background is in chemistry and science, but I like to think I have some kind of power of deduction and reasoning. And we all do. We all possess that power. And we should be questioning what is being presented to us, good and bad, to arrive at the truth. This is what is so great about our democracy. And this is a dream we have for our democracy. We can speak up. But sadly, we do not. We have the power in our hands, Chuck, as American citizens to do that. So we can protest, we can write, we can express our opinions on these podcasts that reach many, many people. And it's my dream, in line with what your vision is for a new American dream, to stand up and take that action. 2020 is a perfect year. It'll give us 2020 vision. It'll give us clear sight to arrive at that truth. We have a gift in this democracy if we can keep it. I think Nancy Pelosi said something to that effect. There was last month a new exhibit that debuted at the Library of Congress celebrating the life and activism of Rosa Parks.
Ah.
And one of the things that was on exhibit there that I read was there was a handwritten letter that Rosa Parks wrote that said something to the effect that she had been pushed around all her life, and she felt that at this moment she couldn't take it anymore. And of course, as you can imagine, this is alluding pointing to the time where she was on the bus and someone asked her to sit where she should be sitting, which is in the back of the bus, right?
Right.
So she sat there. She sat down 64 years ago. She sat down in an area of the bus where so-called colored people were not permitted. She had enough, and she did something about it. How many of us are outraged at what's happening now in our community, in our country, and our world, yet do nothing and say nothing? And I feel personally that I don't want to take things standing up in Rosa's spirit. And I'm gonna sit down and protest. And this is what I hope to do by sharing with you my thoughts. I had occasion to visit Washington D.C. over the holidays. And since POTUS was in Palm Beach, I figured it was the perfect time to go out there. I was truly moved by the history of our nation's capital. and quite amused that there was a construction project around the White House to rebuild the fence around the White House. I don't know the details, but this is a true story. I saw it with my eyes, and I have photographic evidence. Half of, you know, a portion of the fence was the original fence, or the fence that had been there. And the new fence apparently looks very similar. It has the iron grates. It's just a little bit taller. But it's this fence reconstruction project. And I found that very amusing. And across the street from the White House is a famous park where protests have been going on against every president that has sat in the White House.
Right.
People were out there over this holidays. There was one person that was playing in a loop all of the things that Trump was saying, all the things that were inappropriate or all the things that were untrue. And he was playing them on a loudspeaker over and over again. Mind you, this type of protesting occurred when Obama was president and when W was president and when Clinton was president. So someone is always out there expressing their discontent.
Right.
Which is good. This is what democracy is, right?
Exactly.
And also there was I was very moved by the Lincoln Memorial, that the Gettysburg Address appears very larger than life. It is so enormous to stand there and read the entire Gettysburg Address on one side of Lincoln and on the other side one of his presidential addresses. And this president, Abraham Lincoln, was very, he took great responsibility in his role, and he took his duties very seriously, and he realized the impact of his words and his actions on people. At that time, it was a slave issue. He had many things to contend with involving the Civil War and the emancipation of slaves. This was a very huge problem, and he was very moved by that and felt this responsibility to that. I don't think by comparison that our current president has that kind of moral compass, and it's very sad that to think that our own president of the United States cannot go to that Lincoln Memorial and be so moved. How isn't anyone that visits that memorial, how can they not be moved by that? And how can they not have a sense of responsibility to American people and also to citizens of the world? But what we do is that we are currently allowing our president to perpetuate these lies. We are allowing our president to act with a corrupt heart. And we, even if we don't support him, a lot of people yell at their TV. They just talk to their friends and complain. But what are we truly doing about it? We need to stand up and we need to do something about it. And we need to have the courage that, for example, Rosa Parks had in her small area of life, to stand up and to say something and to speak up. Because otherwise, what are we living for? Going back to your point of the new dream, you know, what is living? We have to live. The time just goes by. The time will just go by, and sooner than you know it, we're not even going to know what happened. And we're sort of in that place right now. We really are.
Yeah.
So it's not enough. It's not enough to vote. It's not enough to just share your opinion. There's something else that has to be done very actively. Otherwise, time is just stealing away.
Yeah, also on the front page of our site is a quote by William Shirer from The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich that kind of fits directly into this, into what you're saying. He says, how difficult it is to escape the dread consequences of a regime's calculated and incessant propaganda. How useless it was even to try to make contact with a mind which had become warped and for whom the facts of life had become what Hitler and Goebbels, with their cynical disregard for the truth, said they were. And it's almost as if the big lie that was the model back then is the model in today's America.
You're absolutely right about that, to point that out, Chuck. It is eerily similar. I can't help but draw the comparisons again and again to how the Nazis came into power, and it was just feeding just like a little bit. And before anyone knew what was happening, the whole Nazi machine was running and was very powerful. I can't help but draw those comparisons. And it's very frightening. Did we not learn anything? Did we not learn anything by history? We need to look at that very carefully. We need to evaluate that very carefully and not allow that type of thing to happen again. I truly hope that, for lack of a better phrase, that it won't be as severe as what happened in the time of World War II, but we have new issues that we're dealing with now, and we need to be smarter about this. Definitely, our time is being stolen from us, and we need to be active, and we need to stand up and do something.
Okay. What are some of your ideas for actions that we can take to turn things around?
To turn things around, to be involved at a very local level. If you are active in your community, if you're active in your local politics, with your city commissioners, with your mayor, and even knowing who your representatives are in Congress, even knowing who your state representatives are and knowing who your national representatives are, and be involved, know the politics of your immediate surroundings, and then you can expand that and facilitate change from the ground up. I really feel very strongly about that. People don't think that it's important to be involved in your city politics or your state politics and only look to, for example, what's happening in Washington, D.C., and being concerned about what is happening with the current conflict with Iran, for example. Mm-hmm. There's nothing that you and I can do about Iran, but we can affect change by understanding what's happening in our own neighborhoods and ensuring that our own district wins to the party that you want to win and see, yeah, and succeed, you know, facilitate that change in small steps, just as the lies can perpetuate in small steps and create some result. We can do the same thing, but with a good intention.
Yeah. Well, certainly in local elections, our voices are a lot louder. There aren't so many other people involved, and there's a much better chance that we can make some sort of a difference, which is not to say it isn't important to do what we can on the national level as well.
Absolutely. And suggest something very specific, voter registration in the state of Florida has been a very hot topic. So doing something to volunteer to register voters and to participate in voter drives and to contact your local office, whether you vote Republican or Democrat, go to your local party office and volunteer to do phone banking or canvassing neighborhoods. So you can interact with people and you can do something a little bit more than voting. Not everybody votes, but even your vote, it's not enough anymore. You need to do a little bit more. You need to be educated and you need to share that knowledge.
One of the differences on the local level here in Fort Lauderdale is that parties are not involved in the local elections. The commissioners all run, they're not associated with one party or another. You know, that makes local politics quite different from the state and national level. The two-party system is one of the big problems that we have because we don't really get that much of a choice. Candidates and policies are dictated to us from very powerful corporations that are in control of both parties. And while there are some surface differences at heart, they're all basically the big money people and they're running everything.
Well, when money runs everything, we don't have a true democracy, do we? We have an oligarchy.
Exactly.
I think we have a majority two-party system, but I think there are other political parties that exist. However, they do not have the financial backing to even make a presence. The libertarians, for example, that's a political party where we're more aware of that, but they don't have the sway that a Democratic or a Republican machine has.
Right. The last two presidential elections, I voted for the Green Party candidate.
You see?
But many people tell me that I was throwing away my vote and that it's my fault that things are the way they are. So who knows? Anyway, Gina,
you know, there is some truth in that. And I would love to expand on that in another program.
Unfortunately, we are out of time right now. This has been a very interesting talk. Thank you so much for being on the show. And
thank you for having me, Chuck. And next time, I would love to read my poem "Stolen Time" and talk about that a little bit. It just leads off of what we were talking about time. Thank you for having me on, and let's keep up the new dream.
You bet it. Thank you, Sheena, and thank you, listeners, for joining us. And we'll talk to you on the other side of the station break. Welcome back, everyone. This is the New American Dream Radio Show. I'm Chuck Gregory. And we are streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. I'd like to remind everyone this is listener-supported network, and they really deserve your support. We have two streams of radio going just about 24/7. It's a great network.
Good evening.
Well, and there, that voice was Philip Ferrugio, who is the next guest, and he will be hosting this half hour of the show. Welcome to the show, Philip. Happy New Year again.
Happy New Year. Happy New Year. You know, it's funny how technology is so great, right? In the old days, if we didn't have this technology, I'd have to drive 3 hours to where you are to be on your show.
So. Oh, really? Really?
Okay, let's get to it now. As I don't want to say who says it, because these stupid shows. Anyway, Duck Soup. The 1933 Marx Brothers film Duck Soup was meant to be a satirical look at Benito Mussolini, ruler of Italy. In the film, the mythical country of Fredonia, ruled by the effervescent Rufus T. Firefly, played by Groucho, due to an insult by the ambassador of the rival nation, Sylvania, declares war. Laughs abound. Well, in our own nation of free markets, free enterprise, and free use of war, whenever it pleases us, we are led by another Firefly, who is as comedic as he is as dangerous to peace. Of course, the major difference with movies Fredonia and our own is like night and day. In the film, the leader, Firefly, had full control of every decision needed to be made. In our free America, Mr. Trump, regardless of the image he portrays as an absolute ruler, has to dance to the tune of the military-industrial empire, just like all our previous presidents. Folks, sorry to say, but presidents are not so much harnessed by our Constitution or Congress or even the Supreme Court, but by the wizards who the empire picks to advise him. They decide the when and if of such dramatic actions like the other day's drone missile murder in Iraq of the Iranian general. Unlike when Groucho decides he was insulted by Trentino, the Slovenian ambassador, and declares this means war, Mr. Trump gave the order for the assassination, but only after those behind the curtain advised him. You know, to believe that our presidents have carte blanche to do the heinous deeds is foolish at best. LBJ's use of the Gulf of Tonkin phony incident to gung-ho in Vietnam was not just one man making that call. Or Richard Nixon's Christmas carpet bombing of Hanoi, or Bush Sr.'s attack on Iraq in 91, his son's ditto against Iraq in 2003, Obama's use of NATO to destroy Libya in 2011, or this latest arrogance by Trump, were all machinations by this empire's wizards who advised them. Excuse me. When the late Senator Robert Byrd stood before a near-empty Senate chamber in 2003 to warn of this craziness, that told it all. We are not led by Rufus T. Firefly, rather a cabal that most in this government do not even realize who in the hell these people are. Of course, the embedded mainstream media does the usual job of demonizing who the empire chooses to be our enemies, as with this recent illegal act by our government of crossing into another nation's sovereignty to do the deed. Now they tell us how deadly this Iranian general was. Yet, how many of the news outlets ever mentioned this guy for what they now tell us he was for all these years? Well, here's the kicker. I do not know what this man was responsible for regarding acts of insurgency against U.S. forces in Iraq. Maybe he did aid in the attacks on U.S. personnel. Maybe he was there to neutralize the fanatical ISIS terrorists who were killing U.S. and Iraqi personnel in Iraq and Syria. What I do know is that, in the first place, we had no business ever invading and occupying Iraq, period. Thus, the rest of this duck soup becomes postscript. Thank you.
Indeed. If only it could be funny, you know, like the Marx Brothers were, but it's really more like a horror film these days.
Yeah, it is. It's sad. I was just waiting for your call. I was channel surfing and I was watching President Trump's first rally of 2020 in Toledo, Ohio. Believe it or not, Toledo, Ohio has been a beaten down part of our country, in that area in Ohio, where they've lost so many jobs and so many factories and et cetera, et cetera. And you're watching the people standing behind him, sitting behind him, wherever they were, with the red shirts and the Keep America Great, Make America Great Again, the hats they're wearing, the T-shirts. And I'm looking at the faces of these people. And, you know, they look like mostly, you know, working stiffs, you know, like me and you. I mean,
yeah.
They didn't look like elitists, you know. They look like regular, you know, working people. And they're just totally, totally mesmerized by this carnival barker, you know? And I know why. I know why, Chuck. Because the Democrats have their own carnival barkers. And they have for years. And it's just a joke. It all goes back to what I've been writing about for, I don't know how many years now, maybe 20 years, how this two-party system is a con job. You know, as Ralph Nader called it, Tweedledum and Tweedledee.
Mm-hmm.
And they're both part of the empire. And they disagree, you know, they disagree on things, you know, like a woman's right to choose, gay rights. Well, actually, after you go through that, I mean, there's not much more that they, the Democrats don't really help the working people. The Republicans, we know, don't. The Democrats don't limit the expenditures on the military, as the Republicans don't. They all vote. They all vote to increase the military spending. They all, you know, support. Really, they do. They really support the quote war on terror. Which I don't know, Chuck. Is there a war on terror?
Well. If there were, you know, wouldn't Washington D.C. be the biggest target?
Well, yeah. I mean, Chuck, let me ask you this question, and people listening to this: if we never did the worst thing we ever did, obviously, was invading Iraq. If we never invaded, attacked, invaded, and occupied Iraq, and if we never carpet bombed, Libya. Which is under Obama, okay?
Right.
If we didn't do those things, and then, of course, if we didn't get our little noses involved in Syria after that, if we didn't do those three things, okay, you wouldn't have any refugee crisis. There wouldn't be any refugees. There wouldn't be refugees from Iraq, from Syria, from, you know, Libya. There wouldn't be any refugee crisis. So,
In actuality... Phil, a lot of the refugees are actually coming for economic reasons, and they're coming from Africa, where basically the entire rest of the world has been plundering Africa, taking all their resources. And there are a lot of people starving over there.
Yes, it's so sad, because what the United States and the British and the French, what they've always done is they prop up, you know, in these countries in Africa and other parts of the world, they propped up these phony, you know, leaders that they put into place.
Mm-hmm.
And the leaders are corrupt. The leaders are corrupt. The leaders are really,
right.
You know, really yes men. They're, they're really the yes men for the international corporations that come there and plunder, right?
Yeah, they're corrupt, and that's
and
why we put them in there.
Yeah. Now you look at just for instance, I mean, look at Afghanistan and Bolivia. Yeah. Afghanistan and Bolivia have a high amount, of a mineral called lithium, which is very, very needed for all the all the batteries, and it's a very important item, and that's one of the reasons why there was a coup in Bolivia. Okay, it was because Morales was making a deal with the Chinese to get involved in the lithium. And the U.S. And the other, the U.S., I'd say mostly, wanted us to be, wanted our companies to make the deal, involving all the lithium. And Afghanistan, one of the reasons why we haven't left Afghanistan, there's a lot of reasons. I mean, there's so many reasons. But one of the reasons was all the mineral resources that are under the ground. And we don't want the Chinese or the Russians to get those deals. So we stay there, And it's really sad. It's sad, Chuck, because the things I'm telling you should be known by every American citizen.
Yes.
But they're not. But they're not, No. So, I mean, there's an old Sicilian guy once said to me, he said, Filippo, he said, things are never what they seem. And he was so right.
The longer I'm around, the more I find that is very, very true.
And there's another line from one of my favorite, I don't know if you ever saw this film. You know, I'm a film buff, but
yeah,
there was a film called Miller's Crossing. 1990.
Really?
It was by the Coen brothers. The Coen brothers directed it.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen that movie?
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, everybody who's listening to this should definitely get
Miller's Crossing.
Get to watch that movie. It's in the library system. You can probably get it. It came out in 1990. It was with Albert Finney, Gabriel Byrne, John Turturro, John Polito. It was a really great cast. It took place in the 1930s, upstate New York, in one of those towns like Schenectady or Troy, and it was about the Irish gangster who runs the city, and then the Italian gangster who wants to take it over, and it's just a really humorous look. It really was a humorous look at how these things all happened. But anyway, the Gabriel Byrne character. This woman said something to him, and she said, "Well, you know me." And he says, "Nobody knows anybody." He said, "Nobody knows anybody." We really don't know what's on the mind of someone else.
So true.
So I think that's what I think that's what it is, but. But anyway, to get back to the thing I wrote, I think the reason why these people stand in line to support Donald Trump, honestly, is because the alternative that's offered to them by the other part of this one-party, system.
Yeah, right.
The other side does not really, does not really get to what the working stiffs really want. I mean, Sanders does. Sanders does. Sanders is saying very cogent, rational ideas.
And that's why he
gets
squashed.
But they'll destroy
him. Huh? Yeah.
What?
That's why he gets squashed.
Yeah. But he does offer really good solutions on some major issues, major economic and foreign policy. But basically, the entire Democratic Party is just like Donald Trump's party, they're all con men and women. They just con the American public, and they all sit back. You got a lot of millionaires in Congress. Well, a billionaire is in the White House, surrounding themselves in government with all these rich, super rich people, And you got the media, right, Chuck? The media. I mean, Rachel Maddow, the great voice of the Democratic, whatever you want to call it, she makes like $8 million a year.
Right.
Okay, Hannity makes, I think, over $30 million a year with all his books and everything. I mean, you know, all of these people in the media. Anderson Cooper makes, I think, $12 million a year. These people are making fortunes.
Right.
Chuck. And how could they be the voice of the people? But the public is so dumbed down, you know, that they think that these people represent them, and that's part of the problem, you know?
Yeah, very much so.
Now, what's the biggest part of the whole problem? Okay, the biggest part of the whole problem is the fact that we allow money into political elections.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, private money.
Right.
That is the biggest problem. And we will never have what they tell us that we're a democracy. We're not. We're not a democracy. We're a republic, but we're not a democracy, Chuck. And the only way
we're designed as a republic, actually.
We're designed as a republic, but we're not a republican democracy.
No.
Because if you allow private money into politics, it skews everything, and it's not a level playing field, and even to talk about it is like foolish. I mean the big news stories is how much did he or she raise in the fourth quarter of 2019?
Yeah, exactly. You know,
yeah.
Why is that the metric that makes a candidate viable? You know, I mean the amount of money that people raise determines whether or not, you know, say for the Democrats, whether they can be in these so-called debates.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. I mean,
it's foolish, and it transcends through the whole economy, the whole culture of this country. Sports figures making $1 million a year.
Yeah.
The owners of these teams. Team is worth $1 billion. It used to be,
yeah.
I mean, the guy bought the team for $30 million. Now it's worth $1 billion. So
yeah.
The money that's made
nice
in
profit.
Sports.
Yeah.
In film. These film stars making fortunes in these movies. Okay?
Yeah.
And the studios making fortunes. So everyone's making a fortune on your dime and on my dime. Because somebody has to pay for this, right? Has to be paid for.
Yeah.
Yeah. So politics is a reflection of the way of life in the United States.
Hmm.
Yeah. So, you know, that's why I'm a socialist. You know, I don't think it's right for anyone to make that much money.
You know, you've mentioned a couple of films here, and I'm curious about another one that is that sort of relevant. Do you remember The Mouse That Roared?
Okay, Peter Sellers?
Yeah, it was pretty wild.
The
basic concept was that any country that attacked the U.S. or declared war on the U.S. always ended up, with lots of benefits from the U.S. that, with lots of money.
After the war is over, as the short-lived war is over,
exactly.
The country is defeated. It's going to get all kinds of perks.
Right. So you declare war, you immediately surrender, and boom, you're rich.
You're rich. Chuck, it is duck soup.
Yeah.
I mean, we're living in duck soup right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. People should watch that movie. You know, watch the movie Duck Soup.
Yeah, Duck Soup.
I mean,
well, the Marx Brothers were just amazing, really.
But I just feel sad, that's all. I really do feel sad that, you know, we've reached this point in our country. It's very rough. I mean, to even contemplate what's happening around us is so, it's so surreal, Chuck. It's like America the movie. This is like a movie. Yeah. I mean, Donald Trump is president of the United States.
Yeah.
The guy was a real estate, a guy had a reality TV show.
Right.
Was bankrupt a couple of times, and he tells stories all the time that he, you know, he exaggerates always exaggerates. Anything he says is exaggerations. And he's the president of the United States.
Yeah.
And they're standing behind him with their red T-shirts on, their black T-shirts, right, their hats, cheering this man on. It's just sick.
I know people, you know, personally who used to be involved in various, you know, construction projects and who literally refused to deal with Donald Trump. Because there was so much of a history of basically something would get built and then you wouldn't pay for it.
I know, it's crazy,
I
right?
Mean, yeah. And so now that's the way our country's run.
Yeah, that's the way our country's run. But we can't do anything about it except to get out on the street corners like I'm going to start doing again and start protesting.
Are you? Okay.
Well, yeah, because, you know, my whole thing is about the militarism. It's just sick.
I know.
It's sick military. I mean, I just can't take it anymore.
Right.
It's ridiculous. Well, you know, they use these soldiers as pawns,
yeah,
you know, and toys that they play with. And
right.
They're all full of hot air, a whole bunch of them.
And we're now, like, you know, really close to having a new war in Iran. So.
Yeah, sad.
It is.
But the Iraqis are kicking us out of their country. Let's see what happens with that.
Yeah.
They already voted unanimously. They voted to get us out of their country. So let's see what happens. But let's see if... I don't think we're ever going to leave. We'll see.
I don't either.
We'll see.
Yeah.
Yeah, the U.S. will throw something at them, a bone or something, to make a deal so they can stay there.
Or else we'll make sure that they get attacked by somebody and they need us to help them out.
Oh, boy. Well, the Iranian general was fighting ISIS. He was fighting ISIS. So, I mean, come on. You know, it's like I said in the piece, I don't know exactly what this man was up to, but I do know that he was responsible for the destruction of the ISIS and Al-Qaeda in Syria and in Iraq.
Right.
So I thought they were our enemy. That's the war on terror, right?
You know, we tend to be on both sides. You know, we make more money that way.
Yes. You hit the nail on the head to end this conversation, right?
Yeah.
We make a lot of money on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, follow the money, they say, right? Follow the money.
Indeed, that is so true. Well, Philip, this has once again been a very interesting half-hour discussion, well, 20-minute, whatever it is. And I've really, I think we brought up some good points. Your column was excellent. And your columns will be up on It's the Empire Stupid really soon.
Okay, let's hope that people go and check them out.
Absolutely, I do hope so, and of course, also available there, right in the sidebar, are all of the excellent interviews that Philip conducts with a large number of people. Philip is very good at interviewing, and you ought to head on over to itsTheEmpireStupid.com.
Yeah, check out the interviews. There's a lot there. A lot of interesting people, some of them that you've heard of, and you'll enjoy hearing. They're usually about 1 hour each.
Yes, yes.
Thank you, Chuck.
Thank you, Philip, for being on my show. This segment is is always interesting. And I have a personal friend who told me a week or two ago that this is her favorite part of the show. So,
well, how do you like that?
All right.
Thanks, Chuck. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. And listeners, thank you so much for being with us. This is the New American Dream Radio Show. I'm Chuck Gregory, and we're streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, and it's time for the station break. I'll talk to you on the other side. Welcome back, everyone, to the New American Dream Radio Show. We are streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. And our next guest of the evening is Richard Flamer. Richard joins us each month from Chicago, from the... And 1 second here. I have a little glitch. And so the next guest of the evening is going to be Frank Cordero, who joins us each month from the Catholic Worker House in Des Moines. I will have Richard's segment available later on. And here we go with Frank Cordero.
Yo, Chuck.
Hi, Frank. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Let me put this computer down.
Okay.
Yeah. So for today, as I was thinking about what I wanted to share, I do like it when you open up your song. Your all your shows pretty much are open up with a song you sing, which is. Really cool. I think that's one of the endearing things about your show. Even though I don't know anybody who listens to us, it's beside the point. And the other thing I wanted to say is, in honor of that, I wanted to talk about I wanted to do my prayers. I wanted to sing my prayers to you. My routine is that I do this walk. It's three and a half miles. Every day I can, and it's the best thing I do all day. It gets me out of the house.
Huh.
It's good for my body, my wind, my mind, my spirit. It's when I pray. It's turned out that way. And I've taken to singing the Our Father and the Hail Mary
really?
On this route every day. Yeah.
Really?
And when I sing, the words are out there and they're loud and, and I guess I can pray them. No one's listening to me. I'm on this trail.
Yeah.
But it's a prayer that I just is a different way of being mindful of the words and the prayer. And it's so much more meaningful. So the Our Father, little preface. This takes place in Matthew and Luke. When the Our Father is remembered and written in the... Gospels, and they both present it in the same way. People come up to Jesus and his disciples and says, "Well, you know, do you guys have a special prayer? Do the followers of Jesus have a prayer for their rabbi?" I mean, it was customary for people who followed someone like Jesus, a rabbi, or the Baptist, or someone like that, that they'd have their own prayer, the prayer of a. Of that movement. And Jesus says, sure. And he tells his guys and gals, listen, when you pray, this is how you ought to pray. Our Father, who art in heaven. So here we are. We're naming God, the God in heaven, mm-hmm. as the Father. Intimate, very Jewish. Very familiar. Hallowed be thy name. Hallowed be thy name is just another way of saying always sing God's name. God's name is to be sung. God is to be heard in music. When I sing this on the trail, I listen to God's music as a nature and the wind, and all the leaves and the noise around me. That's all a prayer. That's all hallowing God's name. And then thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. You know, when I pray this part of the prayer, I just think of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. It's the commandment, the directive, the law, marching orders to make God's world in heaven the same here on earth. It's how it's supposed to be done. Give us this day our daily bread. Wow. Now, this one I really like. It's the prayer for the moment, and that to be a disciple and to take on the gospel's agenda. Don't worry any more than what you most immediately need. Now, most people understand that to mean that if we don't get our daily meal, our daily needs met, it's subhuman. Hmm. However, in the United States, it's a totally different dynamic. It's not that we don't get our daily meal. We get too much. Hmm. We're worried about the future. Hmm. And it's killing us in so many ways. And then the prayer goes to, forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. Now, man, that's a mouthload, because that's not about the current present. That's about the past. That's about everything that's tying us down, all the hurts and the pains and the regrets and the enemies and the friends and the foes and all the wounds you're carrying on. You're basically asking God to help you let go of all that stuff, because it prevents you from being a disciple. And then it says, lead us not into temptation, which is about the future. It's about just saying, God, don't put us someplace where we can't handle it. And then there's this last thing, but deliver us from evil. Wow. Now, this one is a showstopper, because when you say the word but, which is part of the translation, it means everything before that doesn't mean as much as this. Hmm. And basically, the disciples are saying, keep us away from evil, madness, craziness, wars like that, famines are like that. Inhumanity at its worst is evil manifested. And it's just a prayer. Keep that away from us, God. And that's a powerful prayer. And then I give that some time, and then I go into the Hail Mary, which when I'm praying the Hail Mary, it's not a biblical prayer. It's one the church made up, which is great. I'm sure it has a great history, but it sounds more like a drinking song. Let me explain. So you begin by saying, Hail Mary, Hail Mary, full of grace, blessed art thou among women. And blessed is the fruit of thy womb. And then it goes into this really kind of funny petition thing. Holy Mary, like a little kid, Mama of God, pray for us sinners now. Like a begging, and at the hour of our death. And that I do on the prayer trail. I yell it as loud as I can. No one hears me. I don't think anybody heard me tonight, but you did. And it's a a prayer prayed well is all you need. One,
yeah.
You don't need a whole bunch. You just need to do it well. I try to do it once a day. And that's my prayer life on the walk.
That's very cool, Frank. Now, it's interesting. At my church, which is an Episcopal church, we're in the process of calling a new rector. Right now we have an interim rector, and he has made some changes in our service. And one of the things that he has done is that when it comes time during the communion service, the Eucharist, to say the Lord's Prayer, he has everyone get up and stand together around the outside, right against the outside walls.
Circle, hand in hand?
In a large circle, hand in hand, and sing Lord's Prayer.
And, yeah, that makes sense.
And now ours is... It's a little bit different tune. It's I don't know. You might call it schmaltzy almost. It goes a little bit like this. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come. Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. And then at that point, we all raise our hands together high, and we do the rest of it, which is not used in the Catholic Church, but it is used in the Episcopal. You know.
It's a great closer.
Yeah. For thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever. Amen.
That's good. That's good. The beauty about my scene is I don't have to sing it the same way every time. Sometimes, so it just goes.
Indeed,
it takes its own rhythm depending on the spirit
said.
And where I'm at.
Yeah, there's something to be said for the solitude there.
And then I'm my only critic, so I just let
it go. Well,
yeah,
right.
But that's yeah. You got to be in front of people. You do well. You do well. So that's a. That's why I thought I'd share this week.
I think that was a very interesting topic, and I'm glad that you shared it. Thank you very much,
Fair
Frank.
Enough. Keep singing them. Keep opening the show with a song. I love them.
All right. Thank
I love
you.
Your selection, too. All
okay.
right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, that was a fun talk with Frank earlier. And now I should have the interview with Richard Flamer ready. And I think it's going to go a little past the station break. So what I will do is stop it just before that and finish it on the other side. So here we go. This is Richard Flamer from Chiapas, Mexico.
Hello, Chuck.
Well, hello, Richard. How are you?
I'm okay.
Good.
Frazzled.
Uh-oh.
Got lots to do. Lots going on.
Yeah.
But they have an ex-nun who's visiting from Guatemala. So she makes me cook and she does the dishes. Which somehow seems fair.
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah. Better than my wife. My wife cooks and I have to do the dishes.
Ah, yeah, I like it better when I do the cooking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You ready to start recording? Well, I suppose
sure
you already
thing.
Are.
No, let's just go for it. Yeah.
Okay. This is kind of a strange one, but I was asked to sort of give a reason for why we're looking for money from the church.
Huh.
The guy who asked me was this guy named Bob McQueen in Des Moines.
Uh-huh.
And so I wrote up a little treatise on what we've done, some of what we've done. We call our little Catholic worker farm Casa de Camilo Torres for the priest from Colombia who I consider the first victim of Vatican II.
Hmm.
That is, after a sojourn in Europe during the creation of the Vatican Accords, he returned to his native Colombia as a sociologist and tried to implement the canon of the Vatican reforms as a serving priest at the University of Bogota.
Mm.
For his efforts, he was censured and eventually defrocked by the bishops of his country. He ended up joining the revolutionaries of the ELN and was killed by government soldiers just weeks after his enlistment.
Huh.
For the last 18 years, we, Araceli, myself, and some wonderful volunteers, have tried to implement the ways and means of the Catholic Worker Movement. After living and working at the Des Moines Catholic Worker, I returned to Central America, not in my former role as a mediocre photojournalist, but as a committed worker of miracles. From an early age, I learned that my personality lends itself to creating connections between groups and individuals, making bridges between those in the U.S. who have some money, girls in the Lambajos, a Guatemalan community of repatriated refugees, who want to continue their education. In that same vein, I've been working with Scola TV, headquartered in Western Iowa, in acquiring broadcasting materials in 4 indigenous languages from Chiapas and 2 from Guatemala. The materials were broadcasted into over 250 countries, and here in the U.S., they're archived at the Smithsonian Center for Lost and Dying Languages. Our miracles are small, but nonetheless important. Initially working with Bishop Samuel Ruiz, we helped start an indigenous community center, which brought together 10 of the 14 language groups, groups traditionally enemies since before the time of the Spanish conquest. With the onset of the Zapatista conflict of 1994, we widened the scope of interest at the center, which was called CIHAC, an acronym for service to our people in Tsotsi. Specifically, we started a daycare center and training classes for young single mothers of indigenous descent who, for the most part, had been raped by federal forces and thrown out of their villages. The girls were living in the hills around San Cristobal, an estimated 3,000 to 4,000 of them. We could only accommodate 30 children at a time, but we held classes for the mothers to teach them not only nutrition, but also about joining together in groups of 3 or 4, with one of the girls to care for the children while the others went out to work in the community for food and rent. The daycare survives to this day, albeit in a different form, now minding middle-class children while their parents work. Most of the parents are friends or relatives of the director of CIHAC. Still, the center served well for the poor for more than 8 years. After my marriage to Araceli, we purchased the farm where I built our house and continued to work with Guatemalan refugees who'd been repatriated from camps in Mexico back to their country, in particular with a group of Chul Indians who settled in the valley from which they had fled in 1982 after a massacre of 190 men by government troops. Working with the NGO from Switzerland, the Chul bought their land back from a military family that expropriated the valley during the war. They formed a Guatemalan cooperative and built a retreat center, which served as a junior high school, several dormitories, etc. The elementary school built by the government was the extent of education for the community prior to building the secundaria. Along with the community center, carpentry shop, craft center, and the library were added. The books came from donations. The craft materials were purchased by the working women, while some of the tools for the wood shop were purchased, but no electrical power went to the shop. I begged the money for the transformer and electrical installation and slowly started filling in the missing tools. A larger problem became apparent when I realized that the workers lacked basic skills in working with tools. With the help of friends, we sent five young people, four boys and a girl, to a woodworking school in San Cristobal. The girls of Yolanda Hoach are another story. For the girls, many wanted to continue their education, but the only colegios, or advanced high schools, were 7 hours away by bus, a boarding school in Huelva Domingo that serves indigenous girls was the answer. With help from the Omaha Diocese, we were able to fund originally four girls, of which one is now in nursing school. The second has returned to the community as an accountant bookkeeper for the cooperative. The third is currently studying at the University of Landmark, at Jesuit University, in public administration, while the fourth is working in retrieving, taping, making videos of the indigenous languages in the region. We currently have three more girls studying at the boarding school with scholarships for two of the girls, sufficient for them to matriculate, while we're looking for another sponsor for the third. While I worked with the Guatemalans, Araceli attended a course in a local community education center that worked at helping local indigenous women form cooperatives, develop literacy, and build a community spirit amongst the women. The result of that course was Siempre Vida, always life in English. The cooperative developed organic products like soap, shampoo, essential oils, along with native medicines. They now have the now 11 women sell the products in a kind of farmer's market twice weekly and wholesale the products to a number of shops catering to the tourist trade in San Cristobal. At the farm, we work with our neighbors in reforestation, growing the flowers needed for Siempre Vida, like jasmine, lavender, rosemary, etc., and planting fruit trees. To date, we've now planted over 150 fruit trees. Being a master of ad hoc has many advantages and a few disadvantages, especially when one can't predict the results. Many miracles come to us every day. The miracle of daycare center and young women with their children was truly a beginning for many. What the daycare center has turned into with the care for middle-class families was not what I expected. But when you strive to make people independent, I guess you can't complain when they are. The training of young carpenters changed the lives of five young people. The girl who graduated from the woodworking school now makes wooden toys with her mother painting the little vehicles while an older sister sells them in surrounding villages. Again, I never expected that two of the young men gained the courage to head to the U.S. to work, providing money for their families and gathering woodworking tools to have their home when they go back to their home in Guatemala. They are currently washing dishes. The final two are working in the communities, building doors and windows for their neighbors. After the earthquake of September 9th of 2017 occurred in Iztapalapa, Oaxaca, the birthplace of Araceli, and over 700 houses of the 13 village were destroyed. The regional market was gone. The two pharmacies in town were in ruins. Both the entrance and the exit of the main road through town was impassable when both bridges were destroyed. Within a week, we had gathered $2,000, which we purchased fresh fruit, vegetables, medicine, tools for one street, up 12 houses, where we housed the parents, aunts, and other elders who had all in common poverty. On our second trip, a week later, we took photos, brought more food, tarps, more medicine, more tools. We eventually brought money for labor and some materials, with the government providing cement, rebar, sand, and gravel. The miracle of 2017 for us was the rebuilding of 10 of the 12 houses, the housing of a widow with her three daughters, and finally the health and welfare of 10 families, mostly elderly. When I first began residing in San Cristobal, I started at the behest of Bishop Samuel Ruiz Garcia, building the community care center called CHOC. As part of the initial work, I brought down woodworking tools from the U.S. At first, I was kept busy building doors, windows, shelves, tables, and chairs. When that initial work was finished, I continued in the shop with training young people in the use of the tools and basic carpentry. Ultimately,
you're listening to Richard Flamer from Chiapas, Mexico. I recorded him earlier today, and I will play the rest of the interview after the station break. But right now, it's time to hear what Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com has to say. So here we go. It's time for the station break. I'll see you in just a few minutes. Welcome back, everyone. This is Chuck Gregory, the New American Dream Radio Show, and we're streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Remember, it's listener-supported radio. Please head on over to freedomslips.com and show them some love. Find that donation button and use it. I'm now going to continue the interview with Richard Flamer that we had at the second half of the last segment. Here we go.
Training some 60 young men. Pedro was, when he entered the era class, building crude picture frames and selling them on the street.
No.
After learning how to use the power miter, the table saw, and the router, he was able to produce 12 to 20 frames a week. None of the basic mechanized tools were for sale in Chiapas at the time. So I made another truck to the U.S., bringing back more tools, which Pedro eventually purchased. He currently has a shop producing 16 to 20 frames a day.
Wow.
While providing a living for his brother and both wives, who sell the materials around the region. Other former students are working on their own with other carpenters around the region. I had the good fortune to run into many of them in my forays around the state. While I was busy with the carpenters, Araceli not only worked with a group, Sempre Vida, but also took charge of our local school committee. She started by organizing the mothers of the students to start helping clean the classrooms and the play areas. In the 4 years in which she served as the head of the committee, she managed to get two of the three rooms renovated while working with state and municipal employees to build a new kindergarten building. She got funds from the government to buy new textbooks, teaching aids, and supplies for the 100 students. With Araceli's acquaintances through the school, she became a further resource within the community, providing funds for medicine, small loans for emergency, and firewood for cooking. We continue to assist with those elements where we can help. Though we subsist on $945 a month from Social Security and a small disability payment from the VA, we're the wealthy in our new community. For the friendships, for the enmity of our neighbors, we're even richer. anyone who wants to sponsor one of the girls from the Lamba Hoach for the boarding school, costs us $1,800 a year, which pays for bed, board, and tuition. I can be contacted by email at flamerrichard@gmail.com. That's FLAMERRICHARD at gmail.com. So, what do you think?
I think you are truly making a difference. And that's a pretty great thing.
Well, let's hope the church thinks so too, so they can give us more money.
Well, yeah.
Actually, we'll just spend it on superfluous things like tools and medicine. And
yeah, right.
Our local friends here.
I tell you, you make things go a long way. Well, there's a lot of sweat equity in there, but I think it comes from the heart. You really deeply care and are trying to make things better, and you've touched so many lives over the years and every day.
I hope so. And actually, in my line, we call it atonement.
Well,
for my misspent youth. Being a soldier in Vietnam changed my whole life. And I can't tell you how awful war is. And so this is my little attempt at atonement.
Okay. Well, thank the Lord. I have never been in a war.
Uh-huh.
I pray that continues. I was one of those out there, protesting when you were serving in Vietnam.
Good for you.
Well, I think I just was lucky to have some people around me that helped me to see the evil in war before I actually had to be part of it, and I don't think that makes me any better. It just makes me a lot luckier or more. Anyway.
Yeah. That's my sentiment as well.
Yeah.
It's always good to talk to you. And I'll talk again next month.
Okay. Well, thank you
I
so
think
much.
I'm going to be in the States next month.
Okay.
I'm leaving the 16th of January, and I'll be coming back, returning around the 14th or 15th of February.
Okay. So you'll probably be in the States the next time I talk to you. All right. Sounds good.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks so much, Chuck.
Thank you so much, Richard.
Okay.
All right.
Take care.
Talk to you next time. Bye-bye. Here on the New American Dream Radio Show, I am truly blessed with some tremendous guests. These are people who are out there in the world, and each one making a difference in their own way. Tonight we've had Sheena Powell Zuri, Philip Perugio, Frank Cordero, and Richard Flamer, and I feel like these are all my friends, and I'm lucky to have met three of those four in person, but many of the guests on my show I've never really met in person. I've only known over the internet. So thank goodness for technology that lets that happen. Our final guest of the evening is another one I've never met in person. His name is Thomas Wertmann, and he is the head of the Ohio MUFON, that's Mutual UFO Network, if I remember correctly. Anyway, Thomas joins us each month from Northern Ohio, and hello, Thomas. Welcome to the New American Dream Radio Show, and you are on the air.
Great. Well, you know, Chuck, we finished up 2019 was kind of like a banner year for UFOs, a bigger year we've had a long time because of the naval encounters that came out. Well, what I'm wondering is what 2020 is going to bring us, and here we are going into a new decade. Well, one of the things that appears to be popping up is the appearance of what they're calling mystery drones over Colorado and Nebraska. Now, here locally, we were talking amongst investigators about how much drones, the more prevalent drones could be coming in the oncoming years and how that would enter into UFO activity. And you originally had the individuals who were like the hobbyists who would go out and buy these drones to fly in around the area, which is great. I mean, I used to fly radio control airplanes as a kid. And it was a great hobby. Well, now you've got these drones which can do incredible things. I mean, they can basically go straight up, straight down. They can fly out mapped paths based on like GPS. Tremendous amount of capability. And you're always going to have those individuals who tend to stretch the boundaries to do more with them. I mean, here in our area, we've had individuals fly these drones into areas operated by commercial aircraft, which they're not supposed to. Well, in this area in Colorado, there's witnesses out there in this rural area reporting that it doesn't appear to be like hobby drones. These drones appear to be maybe anywhere from 4 to 6 feet across. They do have lights on them, and they're seen predominantly at night. These things have been reported to see traveling about 30 to 40 miles an hour. And what they're doing is they appear to be flying in grid-like patterns. And it's not over cities, but it's over rural areas. And this happens to be like in northeast Colorado is where they're being reported at. Well, of course, the local residents are going to get worried because here these things are flying around. They're making rapid motions. They don't know who's operating them. And when they contacted the law enforcement agencies, the law enforcement agencies reached out to the FAA, the DEA, the Army, and the Air Force. And they're all saying, we don't have any knowledge of an activity going on. So who's flying these drones? And by the way, Chuck, it's not just one or two. They're saying that they're seeing like 16 and 17 of these large drones flying like in formations, mapping out land. Yeah, and it's like, who is flying these things? And you can really understand how, I mean, law enforcement, they're not getting any answers. They're trying to protect their communities, and they're trying to figure out what's going on. Well, they've got a lot of reports coming in, and one of the news crews said, well, why don't we go out and investigate? Now, when you go out to try to look for a UFO, chances are finding a UFO, going out and just saying, I'm going to look for one, is going to be slim and none. The same as individuals who go out and do, like, paranormal ghost hunting. The reality is they could be out in the house for days, a week, or more before they actually, you know, hear anything they think may be paranormal. Well, this news crew goes out, and they say, let's go look for a drone. Next thing you know, they see one. It's almost like they're not even hiding. They film one, and the film that they had, they've got a picture on an internet site. It's called The Drive, by the way. This site called The Drive has an area called The War Zone, which puts a lot of stories by about military individuals and so forth, and it's featured on one of their websites. Well, this picture shows just some lights, and with the enhanced version, you really can't tell whether the drone is like one of these ones that has like a quadcopter, they call it, that's got like four propellers on to provide the propulsion, or it's like it more like an airplane. One of the witnesses did say it appeared to be more like an airplane type configuration. A sheriff department, one of their deputies said, hey, no, this, what I saw was a black box that had lights on the side of it. Well, they're finding these now spreading out more over the region. And you'd think if things start becoming, getting out in the news, that, you know, these things may kind of like disappear or at least not be that visible, but they're still there. And they're still flying around the region. And you've got more communities getting involved. They're reaching out to the FAA saying, hey, we need some help to help identify what these things are flying around. Because you know something that's kind of important about this? One of the areas they're flying in, and a number of the areas that these things are flying in, is actually government-controlled territory. And some of these are considered no-fly zones. One in particular happens to be an area about 30 miles from F.E. Warren Air Force Base. Now, this Air Force Base has ballistic missiles. And you can understand how the locals especially get worried when, wait a minute, these drones look like they're mapping out the region, and they're flying in an area about 30 miles from ballistic missile bases. What's their intent? Is it somebody potentially out there mapping out the region for maybe doing some sort of damage or doing something around these missile bases? Back as a kid, when we made radio control airplanes, we used to take and just put crepe paper tails on the ends of the planes and try to cut them off. And some of us even tried to put like little BB guns on them to try to shoot other airplanes down. But now when you think about these drones, people could put some sort of explosive device on them, or even worse yet, Chuck, they could put maybe something biological on board these drones. And what if they could fly them into military zones and do some serious damage? Well, to me, when you've got all these different people reaching out to, like, the FAA, the FBI, everybody else, and trying to find out who's flying these things, and they're not getting answers. Is this some sort of a government program that they're just not admitting? Or is it maybe some private individual who has a lot of money? Well, one of the things they were trying to do is they were letting people know to look out for, like, panel vans, things like that, that could potentially be like a headquarters for these control units, the individuals controlling these drones flying around the region. Well, when I thought about it, they said, wait a minute, you're looking for a panel van, looking for, let's say, motorhomes. Why would they necessarily need that? To me, that would just be like something to look for automatically. A number of these drones can be flown autonomously. That means they can basically program these drones and have them fly a pattern without anybody controlling them. They basically write a program, they send these things out, and then they return back on their own program. So you wouldn't have to have anybody guiding them 100% of the way. And something that happened that kind of almost confirms that was in the region, they had a life flight helicopter that was flying around the area. And they've got their hands full enough just doing their mission. Well, as they're flying, they're normally watching out for also aircraft, because that's one of their big concerns. Are there other aircraft in the region? And the pilot of one of these life flight helicopters said one of these drones went within 100 feet of his helicopter. And to me, that almost makes me think that this thing was flying on its own, flying out of pattern, and nobody's really monitoring this drone. They may have like high-definition cameras on board recording things. They may have other equipment on board recording stuff. But this helicopter almost impacts it. It's almost to me like the drone didn't know that the helicopter is in the region. And this creates a whole different scenario, because you could have potentially a life flight helicopter being knocked right out of the sky by one of these things accidentally. You could have a civilian aircraft, a commercial aircraft flying around the area that collides one of these drones and takes it out. And if this is a government project, and nobody's admitting to it, they're creating a potentially, you know, disastrous situation out there. They've even had the Colorado Division of Fire Prevention and Control. They've jumped on board to also try to help out identifying what these things are, because all they're seeing is just some lights with no real definition. So what they've done is they've allowed the use of one of their aircraft, which goes out to assist with fires. And this aircraft has infrared night vision on it. They've got other types of electro-optical systems on board. And they said that their camera system is sensitive enough to pick up a forest fire, or actually a campfire, I should say, from 28,000 feet. Now think about that, Chuck. 28,000 feet, 5 miles up, and they can detect a campfire. Well, what they're going to do is send this plane out, and it's already done one mission. And they're looking to see if they can identify these drones over the ground. And they're not expecting to see, like, heat signatures, but what they're really looking for is the lighting on these and be able to follow these drones, maybe where they're coming from, where they're going to get an assist on what's really going on. So they're really getting more people on board of this whole situation to try to track down where these drones are. And as I dug into this whole story a little bit deeper, I found out that there's a group out of Louisiana that's part of the government. And what they do is they do testing of drones and also equipment involved with drones. And one of the things that this group did is the organization is called the Global, or is called the Air Force Global Strike Command. And what they do is they basically take and try to test out how effective drones are and find defensive measures against drones. And one of the things that they said is they use a specialized software to detect these things. And when I saw the software, it's actually really interesting. You've got these cameras that point up towards the sky that have infrared technology on. You've got other devices which can pick up the radio frequencies of drones. You know what I found out, Chuck? One of the areas that they're testing them in is Warren Air Force Base out in Colorado. And I'm like, is this intentional that they know that something's out there? Or are they testing out equipment to try to prevent drones from coming into the missile base? But the problem is they're still not telling the public what's going on. Which to me, they should at least say, hey, you know, we've been conducting exercises in the area. They're part of our equipment. Don't worry about it, you know. Huh. But this equipment is really fascinating when you look up the specs on this equipment they're using to test this stuff out. And they also, by the way, use these, they said, who else uses the same equipment besides this Air Force base? But there's a couple other bases on board, but a number of correctional facilities are even using this same equipment. Because you've always got, you've got somebody trying to fly drones and drop pot or whatever else into correctional facilities. But this is, you know, really interesting when you see, you know, 16, 17 drones, large drones flying around in regions, appearing to map out the terrain. And why? And nobody's really fessing up as to why. Well, I know in our area, there's some military operations in southern Ohio where I'm from. And originally they were flying fighter jets at night conducting training exercises. And you could find the schedules online of when they were doing it. But we would get reports coming in of individuals saying that, hey, it appears to be like firefights, you know, in the sky at night, like 10 o'clock at night over southern Ohio. And when you saw it, you kind of were like, Sure. But then we contacted the base. The base said, yeah, we're doing it. We had local ham radio operators confirm it. But now they said they're going to be flying drones in the future in that same region. So these things are going to be a problem down the road, I think, you know?
Yeah, it's pretty wild, Thomas. You mentioned just now you're in southern Ohio, and I think when I introduced you, I said you were in northern Ohio. So Why don't you tell our listeners where you are?
I am in northern Ohio, but the exercises were in southern Ohio.
Oh, okay.
I'm actually in the Cleveland. Yeah, I'm
in Cleveland. I thought you were in Cleveland. Okay.
Yeah.
Or near Cleveland.
Yeah, when you called me earlier, I was cooking, and we're in the, kind of like in a Polish community up here.
Oh, yeah?
And I was cooking some pierogies at the time.
Oh, right. That sounds good.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I was originally from Cincinnati, you know, so that's about as far as you can get and still be in the same state. But
that's it.
You know, down there it'd be more like a Wiener Schnitzel. But
that's it. Wiener Schnitzel or chili, right?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Thomas, thank you so much for joining us tonight. That was some interesting stuff. These drones. It's an amazing technology. We're certainly abusing it overseas, but some really weird stuff going on locally, you know, in the United States. Anyway.
Exactly.
We are out of time. Thank you so much for being on my show every month, and I look forward to talking to you again next month. And, hey, Happy New Year.
Same to you, Chuck. We'll talk to you then.
Okay.
Bye. Okay. Bye.
All right. And listeners, thank you so much for joining us. I hope you'll be back next week and every week right here on that New American Dream Radio Show. And we are streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. It's listener-supported radio. Do not forget to head over to freedomslips.com. Look for that donation button. Talk to you all next week. Thank you. Good night.